Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, Eddington, Ari Aster's new features here. Very divisive, all right? Some say it's about both sides. Some say it's about neither side. So it's a truly modern COVID Western set in the late half of 2020, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Pedro Pascal. Very excited to talk about Eddington. Stick around for the review. We got to talk about Heads of State, a new Amazon Prime comedy. It came out earlier this month, I think, starring John Cena and Idris Elba as the Prime Minister of the UK and the president, respectively, who are butting heads with each other when Air Force One goes down over a jungle and the two of them have to get a bunch of guns and have a big shootout and do this goofy buddy comedy thing. It's from the director of Nobody. It's on Amazon Prime. Excited to talk about it. We need to talk about a couple new trailers coming out. Luca Guadagnino's got a new feature I want to talk about. We got a new trailer for a new teaser for an Osgood Perkins joint, right? Director of Longlegs. He's got something coming. I want to talk about this idea of private cinemas, all right? We saw this earlier, this thing from one of the Alamo Drafthouse founders has got this whole new startup. Cinemas you can rent for just you and your friends, all right? But cheaper than like a big theater. We'll talk about it. This is taking me way too long. We gotta get to the news. Our first story this week. We've got the casting for a live-action Legend of Zelda movie. Right? From Nintendo and Universal. Who's it going to be, Andy? Is it going to be... Who do people say we're going to be Link and Zelda? Hunter Schafer and...
Hunter Schafer. There's this great picture of her.
Yeah, I don't...
Well, there's this great picture of her where she kind of has this like half up, half down hairdo, and it just like she is the striking image of Princess Zelda. But that's not the direction they went with, because Hunter Schafer is in her late 20s, and that's not actually the age range they're going. Our stars are Bo Bragason and Benjamin Evan Ainsworth, both young actors who have done a lot of TV work for Netflix and other shows, BBC shows. They are much younger. Evan Ainsworth, who will play Link, is 16. Bo Bragason, Princess Zelda, is 21, and this movie doesn't come out for a couple of years. It comes out May 2027, so they are going young, and we can, you know, that'll get the teenagers excited and on board and younger, and then they can do several films if they do sequels, that sort of thing. So they chose to go a lot younger than a lot of people thought.
Yeah, live action adaptation is coming from Maze Runner director Wes Ball. He also did Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which we covered on this show. I'm going to be honest, I'm a Zelda fan, right? So I was kind of looking forward to who they were going to pick for the live action. I like that they are effectively nobodies. I like that Link and Zelda don't have a lot of baggage behind them. They don't have a big career that they've already built and are working on. It's not somebody who's like in their 30s. I like that they skewed young. Keeps them cheap for production. You could spend all that money on CGI, right? That being said, still up in the air on whether or not live-action Legend of Zelda is good. Universal Illumination had so much success with the Super Mario Brothers movie, which was like made for babies, sure, but was animated and bouncy and colorful. I don't know how this movie is going to look. I just feel like it's going to come off looking like the How to Train Your Dragon live action, which is, you know, fine. But like, I don't know. I struggle to see the vision. So hopefully Wes Ball's got something up his sleeve, because it just still feels like this idea that's too big. Like it's this idea that's too large for the screen. We'll have to see. Are you looking forward to this, Andy?
Not particularly. I'm not a big Zelda fan myself. I just haven't played a lot of the games. The last Zelda game I played was A Link to the Past from like 1993.
Oh boy.
So I'm not super tied to the property, but I think it could be a big hit. You know, that crowd that saw Super Mario Brothers, those kids will be a few years older. They might be ready for the next video game adaptation. Like Super Mario Brothers, Zelda has a long storied history in video games across multiple generations, so it's definitely the kind of thing that will get kids and their parents excited. Could be a hit, and we're squarely in the era of like video game IP or like toy IP. We're kind of post superhero era dominating film, and this is what a lot of people think is the next thing, is video game adaptations.
Yeah, Nintendo certainly thinks it. Super Mario was a huge success at the box office. Hopefully this one gets some of that same draw. Speaking of big success at the box office, we got to follow up on our Odyssey story from last week. Dude, Odyssey tickets went so fast, and the movie has not even been made yet. Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey tickets, if you don't know this, put up tickets on sale for the 70mm screenings. 1 year out from production. They haven't even wrapped it yet. They're not even like done with post or anything, but Universal put tickets on sale anyway. They sold out faster than a speeding bullet, right, Andy?
Yeah, the tickets were gone in minutes, like 15 minutes. All the tickets were gone. But that being said, they didn't put every single showing out. They had like literally one showing per night around when the movie comes out that immediately went, like the IMAX near me. Literally one showing, but it sold out instantly, which is, it's great PR. It's a total move in the hucksterism playbook. And it had everyone talking, and it definitely worked. It's a stunt, and people were immediately trying to resell them on eBay or other sites. So that's not great, but it definitely worked getting, you know, some more buzz and hype about the movie.
I don't collect Labubus. Like those little fuzzy like collector things, right? But there's like a whole hobbyist community that is into those things. They like line up at the mall and they go to Pop Mart and they try to like get them. Like it's a whole thing. And I don't mean to say IMAX is in the same fashion, but for what it's worth, this movie, The Odyssey, is being shot entirely on IMAX film cameras, which is the first ever for a commercial movie, right? So that whole movie will fill that whole IMAX screen. And if you're lucky enough to live near one of these screens, I think there's like 16 of them in the US or something, just a few others worldwide, it is the best way to see the film. Additionally, Nolan has pioneered this new camera technology. Like they have this new IMAX way they're filming it to make it even better. And filming, seeing it on film stock is particularly special. All that to say that yes, these tickets were on sale for hobbyists. Like that's really who would have been buying these things. But just like any big movie, Nolan being a big blockbuster seller here, like as soon as those hobbyists get interested and start lining up outside the store for tickets, general audiences kind of catch a whiff and go, hey, wait a second, why is everybody getting into this? And suddenly it seems like it's a really big deal that the Odyssey tickets sold out a year early. Universal banked on this. It worked beautifully. I'm pissed I didn't get tickets. Like I saw them go up in the evening. I think it was like 10 or 11 o'clock at night here. And go ahead.
Yeah, no, the tickets went up super late. And there was no countdown because usually you'll get, like I'll get an email from Cinemark or something for early access tickets for things. And there was nothing because it was straight out of Fandango. Like I couldn't buy them on the Cinemark website or the Cinemark app. They were straight through. So there was no warning. I didn't know till the aftermath. So every ticket was gone. It was really frustrating that way.
Yeah, we could not get them at all. I could get like front row corner, right? I could go see the Odyssey the day it comes out. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm just going to wait just like everybody else. And everyone else is too. So if you didn't get one of these tickets, good news. You're in good company with us right here on Offscript, who also are going to have to fight throngs of people, all right, to get into the Odyssey to see it, but we'll make it happen. Stick around here for more Odyssey news when we find it. We're going to talk about Taika Waititi, right? Disgraced former director of Akira live action, right? He's not doing that anymore, but he's got an all new comic property that he's excited to jump into. What do you know about this, Andy?
Yes, Oscar winner Taika Waititi, who is like the most hot and cold director I think I know, where he goes from like making brilliant films to absolute slop garbage. But he is going to be helming the new iteration of Judge Dredd, which is an action movie that was the original. There was an original version in 1995, which starred Sylvester Stallone, based on a comic book property. It was remade in 2012, starring Carl Urban, written by Alex Garland, which was much more warmly received. I haven't actually seen that, and I've been meaning to. And so he's going to be doing a new version. And if you're not totally familiar with the character, Judge Dredd plays like judge, jury, executioner in the far future. Laying waste to criminals and being the law. Sylvester Stallone has a famous thing where he says, "I am the law." It's great. But Waititi is a strange director to pair this with because it's usually like kind of a hardcore action or kind of movie, and he's not really known for that.
Yeah. My favorite thing about that 2012 Dredd movie, it's written by Alex Garland, but there are a lot of longstanding rumors that he secretly directed that movie. It's actually directed by a guy named Pete Travis, who's done a couple of other films, notably A Vantage Point, starring Matthew Fox from Lost. But There's a lot of rumors in the background that he was basically, Garland was basically doing everything. I've no evidence if that's true. If you're a Pete Travis fan, sorry. Please write into the show. Tell me I'm wrong. Mail at OscarFilmReview.com. I'd love to learn more. But for what it's worth, that 2012 Dread movie is really good and a lot of fun. I've watched it a few times and I'll still throw it on like late at night on Amazon Prime or something. I think it's floating over there. I'm the same as Andy with Taika Waititi. Super hot, super cold. His first few movies I was really into. His last couple I've missed. Thor Ragnarok was the big, like, well, hold on. Thor Ragnarok was the good one. Thor yeah. Love and Thunder the, was Love the and miss, Thunder. Right? That was like the, oof, God, we stayed too long. So we'll see. I am personally, I'm a big fan of Akira or Akira, wherever you say it, the 1980s anime. I'm glad he's not doing a live action version of that. I don't know if anybody should do a live action version of that, but yeah. Also, that movie's coming back to theaters soon for the 40th or something. I think they're showing it in IMAX. If you haven't seen it, would recommend. That movie rips in theaters. Andy and I saw it in theaters for a Fathom event a couple years ago, I think, right?
Yeah, we did. Always a great watch. I was going to say, it's going to be interesting who they cast as Judge Dredd. Like we've said before, we've had Sylvester Stallone, Carl Urban, these kind of like strong, hard, chiseled jaw kind of people. So who would you cast now, I think, is going to be an interesting question. Someone in like between 30 and 40, maybe like an Al Ritson. Everyone wants to cast him, but I don't think he can actually like act that
no,
well.
But
Someone that can be a bit of a bruiser, I think.
I tell you who it should be is Miles Teller, because you just throw a helmet on him and nobody will know that it's him in there. I don't know. I would have said maybe somebody like Glenn Howerton, but he's too expensive now. You can't get him. I'm not Glenn Howerton. Glenn Powell, right? Like, he'd be solid. I don't know. I don't know who they're going to put in Judge. Any fan cast, Andy?
Not any that comes to mind. I really need to think about it. But like you said, it's usually like a big tough guy, a bruiser, and I can't, like, everyone in Hollywood, like, people just aren't built like that anymore. That we learn to kind of get away from that kind of physique and kind of physical demands for actors. So I don't know. It'd be interesting who that'll end up being.
One more story before we move into Eddington. From the box office this week, it is Superman's second week at the box office. Those of us who are fans, hoping it does well. Those who maybe not, hoping it kind of falls off. But I think people have been impressed by its performance. How's it doing, Andy?
Superman flew past 400 million globally worldwide this past weekend, 57 million domestic. It's doing pretty well. It's hard to compare, and a lot of people have been hating on it and saying it's not making near enough money as it should be, comparing it to 2013's Man of Steel or even 2008's Iron Man, because this is the start of a new universe. But it's a win for Warner Brothers. The DC brand has been in the toilet for about 5 years. They haven't had a successful movie in a while, and this is a huge PR win. Everyone's loving Superman. Everyone's talking about it, really loving the movie. It is not doing well internationally. Most American films just do not do well in Asia anymore. It used to be the Chinese market would save you. Now no more. They got good at making their own movies. It's not doing well in Europe either, and I keep telling people it's like sports. You can't compare eras. In 2013, comic book movies were on a super high. We didn't have 50 comic book movies that had taken place, and fatigue hadn't quite set in. You didn't have competition from streaming. Lots of different reasons there more money could be made 10 years ago. So I think you have to look at the film going landscape as it is today, not as it was. It's a huge win for Warner Brothers. Everyone's excited for what's coming next.
Yeah, we covered Superman last week on the show. You should absolutely go back and check out the review. But for the quick line, we both really enjoyed it. It's a great time. Would recommend. You're right, Andy. You can't really compare apples and oranges here. It's ridiculous to say that we can hold Superman up to other films and say whether or not one is doing better than the other. But I do think DC is maybe running a little small victory lap around Marvel right now, at least until Fantastic Four comes out. It's worth mentioning, Superman has already smoked Thunderbolt's entire theatrical run. Thunderbolt's made $383 million. Boom, blew past it. It's about to pass Captain America Brave New World, which made $415 million. So boom, Superman beats out two out of three Marvel movies. I'm betting Fantastic Four does better. But DC hadn't had a superhero movie out in a minute. And Marvel's had two this year. So the fact that Superman is coming from behind and beating both of them is pretty impressive. I think it's strong word of mouth. I also think that the next DC project, I think Supergirl, is probably going to have some people coasting in on goodwill from this movie, whereas Marvel has this opposite problem of people like sliding in on cynicism and, like Andy's talked about, just kind of waiting to find out how we get to Avengers. It's like another rung on the ladder. Superman, meanwhile, is like a launch pad. I think people are excited about what's coming next, right? I hope that anyway.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, a huge win for DC and James Gunn. And James Gunn also inherited like four bad movies that he had to promote that first year he was in charge, like The Flash, and I can't even remember the rest. And so this is the first thing that he's gotten to do. It also has heavy competition. It's gone up against Jurassic World is out, F1 is out. It's a busy summer slate. If it would have come out in May or March, like the other two Marvels, maybe it may have done even better. But I'm excited for it. Everyone's excited to see what comes next.
Yeah. I don't think Superman is going to pass Jurassic World, which I think is over 600 million now. Like, I don't, well, shoot, Jurassic World's probably maybe more money than that. Any other news in the box office?
Yes, just to round out the box office, Jurassic World Rebirth came in second with 23 million, nearly 650 million globally, so it's still a big hit. Even that is less than that movie would have made 10 years ago. Like, those movies, the Jurassic World movies, all made over a billion 10 years ago. So it's even, like, things are just different now. In third came I Know What You Did Last Summer, the reboot / remake of that property, a little low, 13 million domestic, 24 million globally. Smurfs, same thing, a little bit, just kind of meh, 11 million domestic, 36 million global. F1 continues to do well with it also crossed 460 million globally. It's continued to have legs. And then Eddington, which we're going to talk about here in a second, 4.6 million, which is less than A24 was hoping to make. They were hoping to get closer to 10. But it's a weird movie in the middle of a busy summer.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any better segue to talk about Eddington, so we should probably jump into it. Any thoughts on this one, Andy?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, let's get down to it. I'm going to be taking the summer on this one, so please excuse any odd delivery here. That's an odd feature, but I'm looking forward to talking about it. The movie is Eddington. So it's May 2020 in Eddington, New Mexico, effectively a ghost town where all residents are staying inside and quarantined because of COVID-19. You guys remember that coronavirus when we were all staying inside during the pandemic. Everybody is online. Everybody is staring at their screens and sharing cynical memes about where the world's going and who's running it. And this all comes down to Sheriff Joe Cross, played by Joaquin Phoenix, Sheriff of Eddington, who has just had a bit of a spat with the mayor, Ted Garcia, played by Pedro Pascal, specifically concerning masks and where you should and shouldn't wear them. This escalates as somebody films the sheriff talking with the mayor, somebody posts a thing about the mayor and what he said about the sheriff, and Pedro Pascal and Joaquin Phoenix begin to have this feud that becomes a boiling pot of cynicism and hilarity and what can only be described as what people are saying is the first truly modern Western, a COVID Western, which is a banana's idea. But this is all coming from Ari Aster, writer and director, who also wrote and directed Beau is Afraid with Joaquin Phoenix, Hereditary, Midsommar, things we are big fans of on this show. Very much so. Some of us have even got ink for it, all right? So we're very much looking forward to talking about this very oddly shaped film called Eddington. It is 2.5 hours long. It is a haul, all right? And it's not doing that good at the box office, but it's coming from A24. We're very excited to talk about it. Andy, what did you think of Eddington?
So I didn't know what to think initially. I had to sit with it. And initially I was like, I'm not sure if I like this movie or not. But the more I've thought about it, it's really grown on me. It's given me a lot to think about. And I think it actually might be kind of brilliant. But it's definitely challenging material. It kind of rubs our noses in a time we don't really want to revisit for a number of reasons, not just the shared trauma of the pandemic, of the divisive nature of kind of both sides politically. And Aster is very cynical in his filmmaking, but he has this main point that we forgot how to have discussions with each other, how to talk to each other in order to solve larger problems. It reminds me of Game of Thrones. That's the whole thing in Game of Thrones, that there's so much infighting that a big, larger problem is ignored. And that's kind of what's happening here. Sheriff Joe is worried about, well, the mayor is worried about reelection. Sheriff Joe is worried about his reputation amongst the community, and their feud means that they're ignoring larger things. There is a homeless man in the movie, homeless problem that no one really wants to address. He kind of just it shows up and is annoying, and everyone is worried about different things and has their own interests in mind, and they're ignoring very real problems. So I think it's, in the end, it's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, Eddington is so much about the setting, right? Which is why it's appropriately titled, like, not only in New Mexico, but late 2020. Like, we all remember, every adult going to see Eddington lived through this time, like, and recalls this odd friction that the whole world had, where you couldn't go into work, and you weren't supposed to go to restaurants, and you couldn't go outside, and everything was closed off, and you'd better wear a mask, and some people are like, well, I can't breathe in them. And the memes and how we dunked on one another, and we got excited when like Animal Crossing came out on the Nintendo because it was something to do. Like how we all just got so wound up, right? Like in this place that we were in on the internet. And Aster cites this as exactly where Eddington comes from. He was on Twitter in 2020. He remembers all this. Like he just wanted to depict kind of like the world he felt like he was seeing. And it's weird now, and it's cynical now to revisit because we're now years past that. And Eddington often feels so directly on the nose for all of us that lived through it. And this boiling pot of chaos that just gets deeper and worse as the stakes get higher in the movie feels so funny because it's realistic. And more importantly, we've all come so far from that since. Eddington is like a fictionalized, smaller version of so many towns in America. And I have taken a lot of road trips, big road trip fan. I feel like I've driven through 36 Eddingtons in the United States, like just ghost towns where like windows are broken out and nobody's coming outside and everything's quiet. And that is used as this perfect foil for Ari Aster to have these showdowns in a ghost town right out of a Western, right? Where like two people are coming out and debating one another. And it's almost like they're going to get their guns out, but instead of guns, you've got phones. And instead of like pulling a drawing on somebody, you're going to film it and put it on live. Like, and people are going to see it and judge it later out of context. And somebody's comment about a mask or a goofy pandemic restriction can suddenly be turned into you're an enemy of the state and you're a bad guy and vice versa. Protests can be turned into terrorism. Like the way perspective can create this crazy friction between one another and this breakdown in communication. Our Aster script is brilliant. He's very funny. Sorry, Andy, you should take this a minute.
No, I think one of the things that's brilliant, what kicks off, they're already feuding at the beginning, but what escalates it is Sheriff Joe Cross, Joaquin Phoenix's character. He makes a post on Facebook, kind of because he's standing up to the mask mandate or something of that nature, and he gets a lot of engagement. He gets a lot of likes. He gets people commenting, and this really boosts his yep. self-worth, and he is going through it at home, which we'll talk about it later, but this leads to him announcing that he's going to run for mayor, and that's what creates a ton of tension between him and the existing mayor. And like Zach was saying, there's several parts where big social media posts are what kind of propel the narrative forward in good ways and bad, but it's a real interesting look at how social media is a big part of this. One thing that will make a lot of people uncomfortable is they bring up the BLM protests of 2020 and the death of George Floyd. And initially, this is something happening elsewhere, happening in Minnesota, happening elsewhere in big cities. And eventually, this protest movement makes its way to Eddington, and you start seeing small protests out on their deserted streets with like 13 people. And what's really funny and uncomfortable is that these are all led by white people. There's particularly a young white girl who is the leader, and a couple of her peers, boys that we meet, they get involved as well, but they get involved because she's into the social justice, not necessarily because they, it's like, well, if the girl I like is doing this, so I'm going to do it too. So they start showing up to the protests, and it's real uncomfortable. It's real just kind of rubbing your nose in the way a lot of things, not just that movement, but the way a lot of movements and a lot of things get co-opted by the wrong people for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, there's a ton of screens in this movie. Lots of screen time, right? Phones, televisions, live casts, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok. Like, you see a lot of these apps, iPhones, right? Like, it's very practical, and it makes the world feel very grounded. And also gives you a lot of avenue to talk about politics, right? Sheriff Joe Cross is a bit more right-leaning. Ted Garcia is a bit more left. But as you get to know them, you find that, you know, it's not all red and blue. It's not so clear. And I've seen a lot of people saying that Astor is both sides-ing this movie. I disagree. I think he's coming out in one particular direction while also saying, hey, like, we're all being a little ridiculous, or at least we were 5 years ago before we ended up where we're at now, which feels like a brakeless freewheel away from where this movie is even referencing, right? Like, somehow even this feels dated, even though it's so radically different than things we otherwise see. I do want to talk about the family dynamic. Andy mentioned it.
Yes.
Sheriff Joe Cross lives at home with his wife, played by Emma Stone, named Louise, and his mother-in-law, her mom, her actual mom, played by Deirdre O'Connell, who's actually really funny in this movie. And they live together because of the pandemic, right? Like, everybody's quarantined, everyone's in, and their house is this like cluttered mess, man. Everything's dusty, and his wife's got this like funny hobby where she makes these little like statue figurine things, and he's trying to be supportive of her and encouraging and wants to start a family, and she is like cold and closed off, and they're both addicted to their screens and like turning away from one another. Mom's watching conspiracy content and printing it out and saying, "Do you hear what the government said today? Oh my God, it's, you know, the globalist elite." Like, it just feels like it skewers this like part of American society that is so quiet and so at home that people can share with one another, but nobody wants to talk about. Like, this escalates when Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone's characters get in an argument, and they have this like horribly awkward exchange, like, that's really cringy and hilarious. And the mom inserts herself in this really clever one-er shot where she's like hiding behind this shawl thing. Like, it's got all of the visual flair of Astor's best work, with the comedy nature of his more recent stuff, Bo is Afraid, to create this like cringy, funny, brutally honest, authentic look at how we all treat one another, even behind closed doors.
Yeah, the family dynamic is really fascinating. And like Zach said, Joaquin and company are like really not smart, uneducated conspiracy theorists. But then on the other side, we have Pedro Pascal, who is, you know, the more kind of eloquent, upstanding, respected member of the community. But he's also kind of, everything he does is for his own self-interest. Like, there in the background of all this is a big data center that he's trying to get built, and that's going to bring jobs and energy and all this stuff to the community. And that's really his concern, because if he gets this thing built, then he's probably going to get reelected, and it's going to, you know, so he's doing everything for personal gain. And he is the one who is, you know, adamant about the mask mandates and about 6 feet and about not having too many people at the store. And again, Astor is showing the ridiculousness of kind of both sides of what was happening at the time. But again, the main issue he's pointing out is our inability to communicate with each other over shared problems.
Yeah. I want to talk about the hard R rating briefly, because I know we got to wrap this up, but this film is R rated. It's 2.5 hours long. And so far what Andy and I have talked about seems funny and cynical, but like not necessarily mandating like the rating that's here. Things get quite wild in Eddington. This pot begins to boil over in small fashion. And I feel like I was very satisfied with where it ends up going. I feel like I've seen some people say like, ah, it's messy, or like it gets real wild later, you know? And like, I don't know. I was into it the whole time. I really enjoyed it. At some point I realized, I was like, I feel like this is probably one of my favorite movies of the year. What do you think, Andy? Definitely deserving of the rating.
I feel like it gets, yeah, well, definitely that there's lots of violence, eventually. I feel like it gets better the longer it goes, and it kind of gets more exciting. We get more and more action. I had a couple, an older couple next to me, that they got up and left about 90 minutes in, and it was like just as it was getting really, really interesting. And I was like, you're leaving at the best part. I hadn't even finished the movie, and I was like, I know it's only going to get better from here. So that was kind of puzzling. But I did hear people that there were walkouts when this premiered at Cannes, and I've heard of other people walking out of screenings. But that's how I know that someone is doing something really bold if there's people walking out. It definitely gets better the longer it goes.
Yeah, it's funny. I had people in my theater a few seats down from me, also older folks, and like about halfway through the movie, Dad starts narrating to Mom what's going to happen in each scene. It'll like cut to a new scene, and he's like, "Oh man, he's going to go talk to the mayor." Cut to a new scene. Oh, he's gonna call that person. I'm just like, he's like narrating the movie before it happens, based on what he thinks, which was obnoxious for a minute, but then it takes a turn, and he suddenly like goes quiet. And then by the time the movie hits credits, he was like, "That was one of the best movies I've seen all year." So like, he came around. He was a big believer, and I think I'm in the same boat. I got to know recommendations. Andy, would you recommend Eddington?
I think I would, with some caveats. Just the content warning, it is about a very kind of traumatic time in American history, the COVID pandemic of May 2020, everything involved with that, health-wise, politically, socially, lots going on. But it's also, it's a comedy. There's lots of a black comedy at that, but there's lots of laugh out loud moments. We get incredible performances from Joaquin Phoenix, largely, who is the main character. Pedro Pascal is more in a supporting role, as is everyone else. It's really the story of Joe Cross. So I would recommend it if you're intrigued by what we've said today, knowing that it covers some difficult topics.
Yeah, I would recommend it as well. I think it is one of Astor's best. It might be his best movie. I'm not sure about that, but I do think it's better than Beau Is Afraid. If you didn't like that movie, I think this is a fresh pass at it. It's obviously not sharing the horror trappings or something like Hereditary or Midsommar, but it's got that same visual DNA in it. And I love the way Astor manages to turn the screws on all of us, right? Like, and how many of us act. It's good stuff. I think Eddington is a banger. I'm looking forward to picking it up whenever it comes out. Yeah, that's Eddington. We got to talk about some trailers, all right? We got four hot trailers to talk about. Andy, what do we call this segment?
It's time for the trailer part.
So I think I'm taking the first one, right? Yeah, I've got the trailer for Luca Guadagnino's After the Hunt. This is Guadagnino's new picture following Challengers. And God, what else did he put out? Queer, right? Yeah, with Daniel Craig that we covered on the show. Yeah, After the Hunt is an odd tale of drama and deception, starring Julia Roberts, Michael Stuhlbarg, let's see, who am I thinking of here? Andrew Garfield, former Spider-Man, and Ayo Edebiri. Julia Roberts plays an older, wealthy woman who appears to be married to Michael Stuhlbarg. The two of them are having a party when a couple of their colleagues, who are younger, come over. Andrew Garfield, who's got sporting a beard and a long haircut, has got some radical ideas about how the younger generation should be treated and is debating them with Ayo Edebiri, who is at the party, obviously actress of color, a little bit younger, who's saying, "Hey, maybe you don't know all there is to know here." The two of them have kind of a loose friendship between Julia Roberts' character, but otherwise not a lot going on until Ayo Edebiri accuses Andrew Garfield of something rather heinous at a party behind closed doors. And suddenly there's an immediate accusation followed by him saying, "I didn't do it." It's a she said, he said, who's telling the truth? That is the drama of After the Hunt. It's an interesting looking picture. Obviously, we're Guadagnino fans here. So I'm curious to see. Andy, what do you think?
So this is an intriguing, I feel like this trope or this story setup has been done quite a bit. And if it weren't for the cast and particularly the director, Luca Guadagnino, I would not be super interested in it because I feel like the setup is done a lot. But it's kind of troubling because I feel like we should be able to come up with more conflicts for women than sexual assault, which seems to be happening a lot. Not that it's not an important topic, but it is a who's who cast. In an interesting dynamic where you have Julia Roberts is married to Michael Stuhlbarg's character, but she has a very close friendship with Andrew Garfield, maybe a little bit too close. We don't really know. And maybe her friendship with or mentorship of Ayo Edebiri's character is also a little bit too close as well. So there's a lot of kind of conflicting interests. We don't know who's on whose side. And this is, we're, you know, in a post or in still in a post Me Too world. And so I think it's going to have a lot to say, and that's why I am looking forward to it because of Luca Guadagnino. Otherwise I would probably not be excited about it.
Yeah, I think I might be in the same boat. Like, it's, I think it's going to be well made, but it is a bit of a painful trailer to watch just because you're like, God, it's such a painful subject, man. And like, I don't know. I think it'll be well done. I'm looking forward to watching it, but tough. Tough subject matter. Anyway, what's next?
We got the second trailer to Tron: Ares, which is the follow-up or third installment of the very long-running Tron series at Disney. We got a little bit more look at it, a little bit more of the sound, and some more of the plot line of this. And so in this version, of course, a big AI company is trying to essentially print 3D soldiers for the government. They said, hey, you don't need soldiers. We'll print you some from, I guess, the Tron world, starring Jared Leto as the soldier who will die and be reprinted or reincarnated, whatever. That's kind of okay. It's not super exciting, but what is exciting are the visuals and the soundtrack. This looks amazing. It looks like a special effects feast, and it sounds incredible with soundtrack by Nine Inch Nails. People are like, I can't wait to hear the soundtrack. I don't care that Jared Leto's in it. So we'll definitely see this for the show. It's going to be a big October release, right around my birthday, actually. So that's probably what I'll see around then. So looks good. Sounds good. Not excited about Leto.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I like the original Tron movie fine. I like Tron Legacy a lot more. I got the one of the posters behind me. They actually, God, when I used to work the movies and it got announced. But Tron Legacy was a Joseph Kaczynski film, who most recently did F1 that we covered on the podcast, Top Gun Maverick, right? That was a big hit. So big visuals, and our original soundtrack came from Daft Punk, who is no longer together, but an incredible soundtrack as well. So this getting picked up with Nine Inch Nails seems like it's going to be a great time, at least in the audio side of things. You should go see it somewhere with big speakers, a Dolby Theater maybe, an IMAX perhaps, maybe one of those 4Ks or something. And I think the visuals are inherited from the previous movie, so it looks very good. Andy's right, though. Dude, Jared Leto is just not exciting in the casting. I think a lot of people just kind of don't want to deal with him. He's kind of got a funny history. You can look into Jared Leto on your own time, but I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm like, it's kind of, I gotta look at this guy the whole movie. Like, Jared Leto's gonna be, all right, he's gonna be our guy. So we'll see what comes out of Tron Ares. I'm sure Disney will do well. God, I take it back. I'm not sure Disney will do good with it. The last Tron movies haven't done that good, but they keep trying to make it happen anyway. So we'll see when Tron comes out this October. Speaking of October, we're gonna talk about the trailer for Mortal Kombat 2. Yeah, Mortal Kombat's getting another movie. You remember when we covered the first film in 2021, right? This one's got a bit more personality, though. Johnny Cage, played by Carl Urban, formerly of 2012's Dread, talked about that earlier in the news, is Johnny Cage, right? Who is a hot actor who everybody loves for all of his action movies on Earth, except one day he gets pulled into a interdimensional portal and taken to a tournament of champions, right? Where only one can survive. Who will be Earth's mightiest hero or the universe's mightiest hero? Well, that all comes down to Mortal Kombat, where Johnny Cage will face off against a host of characters from the video game, right? That's Sonya Blade and the guy with the four Goro with the four arms, and you got the cyborg guy. Like, you got them all. They're all gonna be Scorpion and Reptile and Sub-Zero. I remember my Mortal Kombat roster. They're all coming back. All right, it's gonna be a blast watching Mortal Kombat 2. Looking forward to this one, mostly because Carl Urban's at the center of it. At least it appears. If this is like a cleverly edited trailer and he's just a side character or something, I'm going to be pissed. But putting him at the front of that is wise. It gives it an injection of personality and a bit more star power than that 2021 feature had. Looks like it could be fun. Andy, what do you think?
I think this looks like a lot of fun, especially for Mortal Kombat fans. This definitely has a bigger budget. We have more characters, more effects. Some who's who from the game include Liu Kang, Katana, Kano, Raiden, Sindel, Kung Lao, Shang Tsung, Jax, Cole Young, Shao Kahn. It's just almost everyone in the game and kind of a who's who of actioners. Hiroyuki Sanada returns as Scorpion, who he was in the previous one, and that was a big highlight of that. This is going to be a lot of fun, big special effects thing. The first movie, it came out simultaneously on Max and in theaters. That was that weird time in 2021. did okay, didn't really make its money back, but there was enough hype and excitement for it for them to push a sequel. I think this looks like a lot of fun, and it's one of those niche properties that seems to always have a devoted fan base, and I think it'll do well once it comes out.
Yeah, looks solid. Also, forgot to mention, does kind of echo the original frame of the old Mortal Kombat movie, because that one followed Johnny Cage. He was one of the leads in that. So, like, yeah, just pulling him in, boom, Tournament of Champions, we're on. Like, you've got your person that the audience can stay grounded for, they can root for, and then, you know, you got your Mortal Kombat. Should be a good bloody time. Hard rated R, if you know anything about Mortal Kombat. One more trailer to talk about, Andy. What is it?
Keeper. So this is the new film from Osgood Perkins, who's done three films in like a year and a half. It's really crazy. He, of course, did Long Legs, The Monkey this past spring, and now Keeper. And this teaser, which doesn't show very much, is just, it's real creepy. We see in the beginning kind of four frames, four or five different women who are very obviously interested in whoever they're looking at. And we see them through different eras of time. We see someone in like the 1700s and then the 60s, the 70s, and today, very much kind of in love with their subject. And then it kind of does a turn where we see these same women about 5-10 years later, and they're all the opposite. They're looking at their subject with disgust and disdain. And then there's a third frame where all of them are kind of covered in blood or some sort of something that has got, it turns into pure horror by the end of it. I don't know what this is about. We don't have any idea what the storyline. This is coming out in November. I'm really excited about this. Really creepy trailer, really effective, I thought. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. The first real taste of Osgood Perkins I got was the teasers for Long Legs, which were like so compelling, dude, because we do a movie podcast. And the first time I saw a teaser for Long Legs was in the theater, and I had no idea what it was. And not only had I not heard about it, but it is cut so weird and so surreal and strange and doing this whole different marketing angle. Neon was putting it together. I was so interested. And the people in my theater, like, it played, and I remember people just sitting around stunned, like, what was that? This kind of has that similar vibe, especially with the women looking right down the camera lens. Like, we are the thing they are looking at. They are looking at us. The teaser's just called You're Not Right for This Place, like, which is odd and alludes to what their monologue is, these women as they're talking through the teaser. I like Perkins. I liked Long Legs and I liked The Monkey, and I know there's definitely some horror fans who've come out on the other side of that and said, nope, though both of those didn't work. He's full of it, all right? But I don't know. I think the guy's got style, all right? Like, I think this echoes that style. Keeper looks like it's doing something strange and odd. When a full trailer comes out, we'll know more about it. But until then, I'm a believer. I stand Keeper, all right? Until I see otherwise, I'm interested. This seems like it'll be a good time. Are you in the same boat?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I like Osgood Perkins. I think he's maybe a bit of an acquired taste. Either you like him or you don't. And if you're not a fan of his work, you're probably not going to like this one either. I am, and I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Well, I teased this at the top. I'm excited to talk about it. We got to talk about this new cinema thing. A new way to see movies, right? Nobody's done this before, at least as far as we know. Andy, do you mind telling people the title of this segment? I'll take the headline, shoot.
It's time for the death of cinema.
Perfect. So, Hollywood Reporter had this story earlier this week that I just had to talk about. I thought this was fascinating. Inside the new movie theater concept from the founder of Alamo Drafthouse. Here it is. Private rooms, gourmet meals, and guest attendance. That's right. Have you ever wished you could rent a movie theater for yourself and just your friends, right? Just there's the whole thing. You get the movie and the buttered popcorn, but you don't got to worry about people on their phones. And you got to worry about people talking and texting. None of that's going to be a problem for you when you go to Metro Private Cinema in New York, an intimate, upscale, and very culinary spin on a night out at the movies. This is coming from what is his name? Tim League, who's an Alamo Drafthouse cinema chain founder, all right? He got out of Alamo Drafthouse. He kind of cooked up this idea in 2016, along with another CEO, the idea that you could create 20 media rooms, effectively, inside of a theater space. Instead of having 10 screens or 12 screens. You make 20 small screens. You open them up for current screenings and also anything else anybody wants to watch. They got a curated selection of old movies there, stuff like Raiders of the Lost Ark and Jaws. You can go see the new Superman movie, Jurassic World, or if you want to watch something unique, they can get it for you for an extra fee. And of course, they've got food in all of these theaters. They can rent from 4 people all the way up to 20 people, so you can get together with just a few friends, or you could have a company party, right? And you get all kinds of good stuff. They got really nice food here, all right? They got stone fruit and a garlic and spice menu. I'll get down to it here while Andy's filling in details, but you got to book the room, you got to book some food. It's pretty expensive, but the idea is you can just hang out in your own space for 2 or 3 hours and watch whatever the hell you want to watch. A totally new idea in the movie theater space, right, Andy?
So Tim Lee came up with this because he has a theater room in kind of his own house, and he said, you know, he would invite people over and they loved it, and they kind of kept inviting themselves over, like, oh, let's do the Super Bowl at your house, or let's watch the Oscars at your place, in that great setup you have. So that's kind of where he got this idea from, but I think it might be a little bit out of touch. When I go to cinema, I just want 3 things. I want a clear screen, great sound, and for everyone to behave and shut up and not be on their phones. That's all I want in the cinema. I don't need fancy food. I don't need gourmet this and that. I don't need alcohol. I just need a good environment to watch the movie. But that's just me. Maybe there is an audience for this or a market for this. This comes steep at $200 a pop for, I guess, a group of 2 to 4, and then more, as many as 12. It's going to cost you a pretty penny, but it's going to be kind of like a night out, you know, maybe do an anniversary or something big like that, celebrate your birthday. It's not going to be cheap, but it's going to be a time, I guess. I don't know. I feel like this feels a little bit misplaced.
Andy's right. It's not going to be cheap. I got details for you right here. Upon opening, it's not open yet, there'll be a late summer menu featuring stone fruits, heirloom tomatoes, and summer squash, and a garlic-themed dinner available featuring starters, main dishes, and desserts served family style before the film begins. They will bring it in, set it all out on a big table or a little bar in your media room. Each one's curated. They got a little Art Nouveau look with little lamps, and like it's a quiet, small setting. You probably even get a blanket if you ask for it. They've also created a 7 or 8 culinary cinematic adventures a la Alamo Drafthouse, custom made for titles like Superman and Paddington 2 and Goodfellas. So you can say, hey, I'm going to watch Superman and I'll take the Superman flight or whatever, right? They'll bring out the food they've got for that movie all for you, bring it out together. They said, Andy had the numbers. The 4-person theater is $200 for a 4-hour booking. All right, it's $50 a person. The 12-person theater is $600. Food is $100 per person, roughly. And if you want alcoholic beverages, that's at least $50 more. And this is in New York. All right, so you're going to have to get there on your own and get out. And even if you're taking the subway, it's going to be a pricey evening. The idea is that you're going to spend a lot for a pricey little evening in, right? Like it's something intimate and it's smaller. But I'm also a little bit in Andy's camp. This does not have any mainstream appeal. And the people who are rich enough to want to do this, they're not even going to stick around for the whole movie, right? They'll watch 90 minutes of it and bail. Or they'll go home and watch it in their own private media rooms. I think it's a clever idea. And if something like this opened near an Alamo Drafthouse, I definitely would be interested in checking it out. But the money cost, man, like it just feels like you priced out your movies a little bit, but it does speak a little bit to the boutique nature of where it feels like movies are going, right? People want to buy premium screens and your D-Box experience, so your seat moves and go see it in ScreenX and 4DX, right? People seem to want a more curated, intimate experience with their film. They want to reach out and touch the screen. So having this, a quiet private room where you can hang out with your friends and laugh and joke and text and talk all you want, I mean, it seems like having that on demand might be that, right?
Like I said, there might be an audience for this. It's in the Chelsea neighborhood of New York. Like I said, some people might want this more elite private screening. Maybe it's fun for like one day of the year out. At least that's where I might do this. They definitely need more repeat business than that. It's also interesting, the movies they're going to offer are, of course, new releases, things like Jurassic World and Superman, but they're also going to have a library of older things that you can pick from or have them get even. So if you want to watch Star Wars or Goodfellas or heat like we did the other week. You know, you can curate the experience a little bit more, which I think is fun. But one of the reasons I love going to the movies, and I see so many, is because it's kind of a cheap hobby, and this takes that part out of it.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, like I like that, the hook of it, the Metro private cinema, right? Every movie in theaters on demand. Like, it's good. Like at the top, that sounds real great. It's almost like MoviePass, right? That energy of like any movie you want, you can have. Like, you can go see whatever you like. Private cinema, it's right there in the title. We'll see. Alamo Drafthouse has like 45 locations in the United States. We'll see if we get any more than one, if it even works out of Chelsea. Like, gonna have to, I can't imagine what their overhead costs, but maybe it'll work. Maybe Tim Lee will pull a rabbit out of a hat here. Anyway, we got to talk about one more movie on the podcast before we wrap up this week. Andy's going to be taking the summary on this one. Very much looking forward to hearing what he has to say about it. Andy, please take it away.
Heads of State. So this is the latest action comedy from Amazon Prime, starring Idris Elba and John Cena. As the President of the United States, played by John Cena, former actor, action star turned politics and president, and Idris Elba as Sam Clark, the British Prime Minister, they meet for the first time, not really getting along. They're upset one didn't endorse the other for the election. They try to bury the hatchet and try to, you know, present a unified front to the people. When they board Air Force One, they are attacked mid-flight on the plane by people undercover on the plane, and also by fighter jets, which is kind of crazy. The plane explodes, but they survive. They jump off with parachutes, land behind enemy lines, and have to work there together and work their way back through the safety. Meanwhile, there's political things going off in the Oval Office. We have a spy, MI6 character, played by Priyanka Chopra's Jonas, who's also involved with that, and she eventually meets up, and the three of them kind of work together to survive, and there's lots of action and uncover a conspiracy of who tried to take them out. It's over. It's all right. That's our synopsis. Zach, what'd you think?
So I think there's a lot of talent behind Heads of State. It's coming from Nobody director Ilya Naishuller, I think is how you pronounce his name. Also directed Hardcore Henry, a first-person action movie, if you remember that one. And it's got a big cast of some pretty good people. I know you already mentioned Idris Elba, John Cena, Priyanka Chopra, Jonas. You also got Patty Constantine, Carlo Gugino, Stephen Root, Jack Quaid, Sarah Nile, Chartel Copley makes an appearance in this film, probably because he was in a lot of Hardcore Henry with Ilya. So pretty good. That's 9 big names at the top that could all be in their own television shows or movies or doing their own thing. They've all come here along with a bunch of other people to make Heads of State, Amazon Prime buddy comedy. I think this is better than many of the Amazon Prime buddy comedies. This is better than Jackpot that we watched for the show, starring John Cena and Awkwafina. I think this is better than that Identity movie we watched not long ago. God, what is the name of that movie?
I can't.
Not Identity. They're God. Orlando Bloom and Jesus. I can't remember the name. It's so forgettable. Nick Mohammed's in it. Orlando Bloom's in it. We talked about this 2 weeks ago on the damn podcast. I'm gonna kill the whole review talking about this. I'm looking it up. I don't care.
Got to move on. Got to bail.
Nah, I'm not bailing. I'm not on this one. Anyway, I am bailing on this one. Anyway, it's better than most of their forgettable movies. But also it feels like it is a lesser version of like James Gunn's Suicide Squad, where Idris Elba and John Cena originally faced off as two people in the jungle on different missions and having to do this action thing. Obviously, they're playing different characters there. Idris Elba's playing Deadshot and Cena's playing Peacemaker, and they got a whole team around them. But that's what this feels like, especially when they're like walking through the jungle, bloodied and arguing. It's like, I've seen this before, and Gunn did it better. I do think it's better than most streaming fare, for sure, if you're looking for like a direct streaming comedy. But this one just does not, it's too long, and it ends up just not really keeping in you interested in the turns. You end up getting your phone out. It's a second screen joint.
So, this movie's way too long. It's a full 2 hours, and it would make a good 90-minute idea, and I don't know why they stretch it out. The other thing, while we have a lot of star power, we also have the Netflix or the streaming cheapness of it all. Like, clearly most of this is on green screen. There's a lot of really unconvincing CGI. I mean, like, Air Force One gets attacked by fighter jets, and there's all these explosions, and there's parts where you know they're on a studio, and you have John Cena and Idris Elba just going like, just screaming and waving in terror while all this, you know, stuff goes on in the background. The effects look pretty bad most of the time. Reminds me a lot of like, the way Bollywood movies are a lot of times, just tons and tons of action, just throwing everything in the wall. So the pacing just kind of hurts. We have a couple of surprise cameos throughout the film, which I think is to help keep us interested, but it kind of has the opposite effect. It's just like, oh, there's that guy. Oh, there's that woman, or that's that person. And they don't really have important roles, and you know they're not going to really last the film very long.
Yeah, the action is good, I should say. The action in this is solid. Director Ilya Naishuller is bringing a lot of that from his previous action films. Here, all that stuff works. Like CGI missile running into CGI Air Force One, blowing up, we got to jump out in the jungle, shoot out in the jungle with some crazy people, car action sequence. Like, that stuff's solid. That stuff is good. And Cena and Elba are good, right? And these other characters around them, like these other actors and actresses, Carlo Gugino is very fun, solid. But the problem, like Andy said, is it's just kind of movie by algorithm, right? Why do our characters have to wreck in the jungle? Because they need a conflict. And how are they going to get out of there? Well, they're going to go to their secret thing. You've seen this movie before. Amazon knows you've seen this movie before, which is why they bought the script, because it's like, it checks all the boxes for engagement to get you to hang out and watch a movie for a couple hours. And it's better than most at doing that. By the way, that Orlando Bloom movie I forgot about, Deep Cover is the name of it. It's
Deep Cover, yes.
It's fine. Yeah, the review's up on the channel. I think I said in the thumbnail, it's fine. The point is, like, this movie unfortunately falls in a familiar framework that you've already seen. You've seen it a couple times. And everybody in it seems to be acutely aware of that. Folks are getting the paycheck. And Elba's fun and Cena's fun. But after that comedy and after that good action is about an hour and a half of bloat, of movie that doesn't really go anywhere and jokes that don't really land and bits that are just kind of there to fill the runtime and get you over the top. And while I feel that people are going to say I don't like it, I wasn't really for me, but I do. Those all Amazon movies make a ton of money and do great for the service. And there's clearly people that tune in and watch them and enjoy them. So in that bracket of like streaming movies, it's like cinema up here. And then there's these movies down here. It's good. It's good down here with like the, you know, the streaming films, but like, it just doesn't feel very cinematic. It just doesn't feel very big.
Yeah, the action is very hit and miss where, I mean, there's everything in this movie. There's shootouts, there's explosions, there's plane crashes, car crashes, fist fights. But it gets into that realm of where a lot of modern films really focus on realism, like something like John Wick, of having action feel real and authentic and like counting the number of shots and bullets in your gun, that sort of thing. This is the opposite of that. People are just spraying and praying. They're fully automatic weapons. No one's aiming. No one's actually... And they just bullet holes everywhere. No one getting hit. Everyone has plot armor. There's almost too much action going on. If you can kind of imagine that, it's too much to kind of keep up with. And they're all surviving these very impractical situations that are taken from lots of different movies. It starts like the original Mission Impossible, where Priyanka Chopra's Jonas, she's on this MI6 team who basically gets ambushed and her team gets taken out, and she kind of miraculously survives and has to help uncover the conspiracy. Also, I wanted to mention Patty Considine is in this as a Russian arms dealer bad guy who's like the least unconvincing or the most unconvincing bad guy ever. It's just like he doesn't even bother with the Russian accent. He's just like, I'm not doing it. And it's just, yeah, it's just he phoned it in so much.
Yeah. I love Carla Gugino. She does a lot of work with Mike Flanagan. I like a lot of stuff she's in. Her whole plot line can go. Pat, it's the worst performance I've ever seen from Patty Considine ever. It looked like somebody was holding him at gunpoint and making him do this movie. Like, it's crazy how much he phones it in. Cena and Elba, doing good. Like, they're fine. Priyanka Chopra Jones, love her. She's great. Like, but it's just not better than the sum of its parts. It's 1:56. I'm going to boldly say you cut a full half hour out of this. 86 minutes. Throw credits on it to make a feature length. Do one of those long title sequences they do now in streaming movies, right? Like, make it, just push it over 90. But there's just a lot here that doesn't It just doesn't do anything for you. You end up bored. You get your phone out. It's a great movie to do laundry to. But I don't know. It's funny. It's got action, but it's just not enough to keep me interested for 2 hours. How about you, Andy?
It's definitely, it's a decent concept. Like this concept reworked and refined and polished would work. You could put it in theaters. You know, you do the buddy comedy thing. You do the action thing. You do the conspiracy thing. You just polish it all so much better than it's done. And it'll work, but it's just so thrown together. And like I said, our stars are clearly not on set or not in their environment. There's a part where a train is leaving, like going away from us, the audience. And you can tell that Cena and Elba are not on that train at all. They're on a green screen and the train has been shot separately and is just kind of exiting. It looks so fake. And there's so much of that in there. So this would work with better polish.
Yeah, like it's so obvious that like the goal was not to make something that's entertaining. It was to make something that's going to be on the front page of Amazon Prime for 2 weeks. And enough people are going to click on it because the thumbnail looks good and start watching it to go, oh, this is all right. And then leave it running and just clock up view time. It's cinema as content, right? And it's not cinema as something somebody enjoys or like really chases, like in the way that Ari Aster is writing and directing Eddington about something like a time in his life that's particularly challenging. Like that's not doing any of this. This movie is just checking the boxes. We got to have action. We got to have a couple hot stars. Got to have a funny comedy script. Bing, bang, boom. You got yourself a 2-hour piece of content you can put on Amazon Prime for 3 weeks. Like, it's good. I do. If you're trying to be content, it's better of the content. I think it is high tier content, but that's all it is. And I think the people making it know that that's what it is. And I think it's worth calling out here that like you guys made content and that's good. And that's great. But like, I think the better version of this movie is James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. Like it does everything Absolutely. This movie is trying to do better and more interesting. So I don't know. Like it's a funny watch in that way because I like Suicide Squad and I like what these guys are doing here, but it's just not, doesn't pass the muster. I got to wrap this up. Any other thoughts, Andy, for recommendations?
I feel like the streamers do this every summer or basically around the holidays, both in the summer and like Christmas, New Year's. They put out some sort of action slop where it's like the old guard 2 or last year's, was it Joyride or the lottery one with John Cena and Awkwafina?
Jackpot.
Thank you. Where, they just put on something that they get you stars, they get them on screen. They cut all kinds of corners in production, staging, all the things that make a movie interesting in there. Just kind of hope you watch. And we did. This came out over July 4th weekend. So it was like, hey, throw something new on that we haven't seen. So it's just, I wish they would make real movies.
Yeah, there's a great video out from a YouTuber called Nerdstalgic called Why All Netflix Movies Feel the Same. And he cites 3 films. They're a lot like this one, all from Netflix. The Electric State, which we covered here on the show, The Gray Man, which we covered on the show, and Red One, which we didn't cover on the show. And all of these movies share this same framework. Like a couple hot stars, $140 million in CGI, goes up on the website for 3 weeks and people watch and go, oh, that's cool. But that's like, it just doesn't have any like spirit to it because ultimately it's not being written to be an expression of any one artist. It's being written to go on a page for 3 weeks and just be content. It's like a blog post, right? Like it's got to have all the elements of a good blog post. So you even got to have the word count, but like, it's not enough to really bring you in and keep you interested, which is why it's not in a movie theater and why it's on Amazon Prime. If you're looking for something like that on Amazon Prime, I think this movie does better than most in that vein. I feel like I'm talking in circles now. I'm running back on myself. Andy, any other thoughts before recommendations?
I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend Heads of State?
I would say soft pass on this. It's very cliche. It's too long. Our leads are funny and entertaining. The action is sometimes good, sometimes terrible and unconvincing. It's very cliche. You've seen this movie before, but if you got nothing better to do or you need something to entertain, you know, watch them with the family or your folks for the weekend or put it on the background while you're doing chores. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. If you are on Prime Video and you're like, oh, new buddy comedy starring Idris Elba and John Cena, you'll probably like what's going on here. Like the action is good flavor on top of that. And ultimately, like the two of them hanging out and arguing before resolving their differences and coming together to be one unstoppable force is good and works. And like that's the formula. But if you're looking for something cinematic, I would say just go watch James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. Like that is the better version of what's happening here in most ways. I think it's, you know, yeah, if you're looking for a quick prime something to throw on streaming while you're doing chores, just like Andy said, like go for it. Solid. But if you're looking for like something that's really gonna like pick your brain and make you wonder, you know, a little bit of art stuff people are typically looking for, I don't think Heads of State is it. I feel like I'm going to catch comments from people. I'm already sweating it. And people will be like, I liked Heads of State. It's good.
This video is going to do well. And we're going to get all these negative comments.
Whatever. If you want to see videos that we're doing, you can check them out on the YouTube page. Before we get to that, though, plugs for the show to tell you how you can help us out, because we really appreciate it. First, Andy's going to tell you what we're watching next week. Andy?
So we're actually taking next week off because I'm going to be traveling. But when we come back, we'll be doing Fantastic Four First Steps, which comes out this Friday. Highly anticipated. Happy Gilmore 2, which also comes out this Friday on Netflix. We will be getting our Fantastic Four video out on YouTube before I leave. That'll come out Sunday or Monday or so. So catch that on YouTube if you want. But we'll be back on August 5th for Fantastic Four and Happy Gilmore 2.
Incredible plug for the channel. That's right. If you want to see our Fantastic Four review before it hits the actual podcast in a couple of weeks when it gets back, check out the YouTube channel, Offscript Film Review. Go hit us up. Leave a like, comment, subscribe, rate, review, whatever you can do, Doug. Any engagement at all helps us out a ton. Makes a huge difference in the algo. Please come check out the YouTube channel. We're on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the usual social media places. You can find us over there. For our audio listeners, if you want to hear the audio version of this show, you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, iHeartMedia. Take us on the go, right? Listen to Offscript in traffic. Listen to Offscript on your daily walk or run or what have you, right? You can have us in your ears with you. We're our website, offscriptfilmview.com, hosts everything we do and more. Lots of little bonus content over there. And you can write into the show directly at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. Write in, let us know what you thought of Eddington, all right? If I'm wrong about Heads of State, go ahead and tell me, all right? I'll read it. I swear I'll actually read it. So I appreciate all the feedback. And I appreciate you guys listening to episode 301 of Offscript Film Review. From all of us at Offscript, the home of bold cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.